Okay, in our discussions about business ethics, we'd like to focus a little on found objects, you know, mitziot. And the law, of course, is that if you find the lost object, you have to return it to its owner. Sometimes there's a debate about who actually found it. You know, two people claim each one individually, well, it's mine because I found it first. In other cases, you may have situations where, like we'll see in the second case, which is in the middle of your second page, is that there was one person who actually found it, but he found it in a place that was designated for someone else, which is called a chatzer. So let's try to see if we can cover two cases. I don't know if we'll get to both, but we'll give it a shot. So the first case is a case about a lost object that was underground, and it was discovered actually by a dog. And the dog smelled it, but someone else found it. In other words, the dog was owned by, let's call him Mr. X, but Mr. Y did the digging, mm-hmm. and he actually uncovered it, and he claims it for his own. The first guy who owns the dog says, well, how can you take it away from my dog, you know? So we'll read the case inside. The case is the following. Adam halach l'tayel im shcheino. So a person is accompanying his friend on a walk. They're going on a little mini hike. His friend owns a dog. And they go into a place where there are trees, a little bit of a park of some sort. And the dog, of course, is accompanying them. And when they get up to one of the trees, the dog stops dead in his tracks and starts barking. And the owner of the dog is trying very much to quiet him down, and he's unsuccessful. He tries to move the dog away. He can't do so. He tries to understand why the dog is acting so strangely. Can't figure it out. The other fellow, we'll call him Reuven, he begins to understand that the dog must be smelling something, perhaps something that's buried underground, and he therefore begins digging with his hands, with whatever sticks or twigs he can get a hold of. Mind you, the owner of the dog is doing nothing. He's completely passive, just trying to pull his dog away. But after 20 minutes of digging, Reuven will call him, the corpse of a dead body that is identified as an Arab whose body is already decomposing. It's been a while. Next to his body, Reuven unearths a tick. A tick means some sort of leather pouch, a bag. And what does he find inside the pouch? $100,000. Now, I can't vouch for the truth of the story, but it is an impressive story that you dig up and you find a body with a pouch next to the body. Maybe the Arab was, I don't know, maybe he was a thief, you know, and he was killed and somebody buried him, and who knows? They immediately call the police, and despite all the investigations and the lab tests that they did, they were not able to identify the person who died. Therefore, lefichach he natna lamotze et hatik. The police handed over this pouch to the one who found it with all the money inside. Meaning the police were thinking the following: if we can identify this body and determine who died, then we could give his inheritors, mm-hmm. his next of kin, this money and nice. Say it belonged to this poor fellow who's dead. But now that we cannot identify it, then who has rights to this pouch, none other than the person who discovered it? However, you can already guess that the owner of the dog is not going to be happy about this. He's going to claim, wait a minute, I should at least get part of this this mitzia. Now, I'm not claiming the whole thing. I'm not being a chazbuk, as we would say, and claiming the whole thing of myself. But what caused you, what facilitated that you would find it, Reuven, if not for my dog? Mm-hmm. So it's really my dog that found it. On the other hand, Reuven says that it was I who uncovered this pouch full of money. I took it from there, and therefore it belongs to me. So again, does the owner of the dog have some claim, partial claim, because his dog actually discovered? So the question is, who's right in this case? If you turn on to the other side of the page, you'll see a Mishnah in Bava Metzia on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Ro'es HaMetzia V'Nafal Aleha. A person notices a lost object and he falls upon it. Notice that he didn't pick it up. The normal kinyan when you want to acquire ownership is to lift it up. And that he didn't do. Ba'acher v'hichzik ba'f. A second fellow comes along and he picks it up. So the first guy saw it first, but he fell on it. The second fellow lifted it up. So the Mishnah paskins, ze shehichzik ba zacha ba. The one who did the kinyan, he picked it up. He's the one who owns it. So the Gemara quotes Reish Lakish. Om Reish Lakish mishum abba kohen bardala arba amos shal adam konoslo b'chol makom. The Chazal made a takona that wherever a person goes in the public domain, mm-hmm. he has a radius of 4 amos that surround him, mm-hmm. and any lost object that falls within those 4 amos are automatically his. My time at Tekinu Rabbanon. What was the reason that motivated the Chacham to make such a takonat lo asilin tsuye? So the people shouldn't come to fight. Mm-hmm. So it's first come, first serve. I got there first, and therefore you can't jump on it and take it away from me. You know it's mine because dalat amos shel adam konoslo. Omar Abaye, Mosiv Rav Chiya Bar Yosef Peya. So Rav Chiya Bar Rav Yosef asked the question from Peya, and Rava asked the question from Nezikin. So let's look at the second question. That's more important to us. The second question is from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that the first fellow saw the Metziah, he saw the lost object, and he fell on it. The second guy came along next, and he picked it up. We give it to the second guy. Why can't the first guy, I amrit arba amos shalom konos lo v'chol makom, nikne le arba amos dide? We realize that falling on an object is not an act of acquisition, it's not a kinyan. But even before he fell on it, it was his because it came within his dalan amas. He didn't make some sort of declaration to indicate that he's interested in making a kinyan. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Itikun Rabbanon kilo amar mayhavi. So what? Once the Rabbanon made a takana that your radius of 4 amas is kona for you, then you don't have to make a declaration. So my answer is, came in the nafal, since he fell upon it. You know, it's like a fumble in football. Have you ever seen where they just fall on the ball? Goli daite, he's revealed his intention. Dimenefila nichale denikne, his interest is in acquiring ownership through nefila. The arba amos lo nichale lenikne. So in other words, even the kinyan of Dalat Amos, although it doesn't require an overt declaration, I want to be kona the object, so there's an automatic kinyan, but that's only conditional on the fact that you don't indicate that you have a different method of kinyan that you want to employ. that you don't want the Dalet Amos to be Konos. You want to be Kona through Nefila in this case. Now, the Rishonim are going to raise a question based on a sugya in Kiddush. So if you take a look at the second source on your page, this is a Gemara Kiddushin on Daf Nun Tes, and it's called, it's a very famous sugya, I don't know if you've heard of it, Ani Hamahapech Becharor. A poor person is looking for a lost object. I know you've seen this, where the destitute, unfortunately, go to certain places where people, they go, whatever it is. So Ani Hamahapech Becharor, he's looking for perhaps a piece of bread here that's left over in the barbecue or whatever it might be. Uba achav enotla heimenu, and somebody grabs it before the ani can get a hold of it. My, what's the law in such a case? Amale nikra rasha. It means that the chachamim did not allow you to do that. If the ani is about to grab onto something and acquire it, possess it for himself, you can't grab it away. You can't come first. So getting back to our sugya, if a person is looking for something, about to acquire it, he's indicated that he's interested in acquiring, you can't grab it away from him. You can't chop it. So why does the Gemara say that in the case where the first guy fell on it, he's not Kona, the second guy is Kona, but the second guy apparently violated the takana of Ani Hamahapech Becharora, because the very moment the first fellow jumped on it, although he hasn't yet made a kinyan, but he's within the bounds and the description of Ani Hamahapech Becharora. So Tosis asks this question in Bav Metzia. He says, Ma'avir no sahay menu, v'afilu rasha lo mikri. You cannot even call him a rasha. No, forget about the legal rights, but what about the moral, ethical justification or lack thereof of the second fellow's actions? He went ahead and he grabbed it, picked it up, but the first guy was an Ani Hamahapech Becharor. Tos says no, in this case we don't apply the rule of Ani Hamahapech Becharor. Why not? Hainu mishum di efshole lemitrach ulemizvin arach rita. Let's say, for example, you want to buy a piece of real estate. So I see that you're in negotiations with someone, and then I jump in and I say, no, let me buy it. That's Ani Hamahapech Becharor. Why? Because you have a right to say to me, Berzon, what are you getting involved in jumping in here? Go buy a different piece of real estate. It's not the only house on the market. But here he says, Aval b'mitzia o behefker. How often can you find a mitzia? It's once in a blue moon, as we say. You can't say, well, why are you chaffering here? Why are you intervening and grabbing this mitzvah? Go find another mitzvah. Where am I going to find another mitzvah? Is there fa'filu rasha lo mikri? So Tosus establishes the principle that in a case of hefker or mitzvah, a very unique opportunity, we don't apply the principle of Ani Hamahapech Becharor. What Tosus might be saying is that in the case of hefker or mitzvah, everyone has rights to this object. No one could say I got there first. It's going to be a fight to the finish. It's laissez-faire. It's pure capitalism. Whoever gets to make the kinyan first, it's his. Trouble is that not everyone agrees with Tosfos. If you take a look at the Ramban says Ma'avir no sohei menu delav ani amahapich b'charorahu shehei ze nikur rosha. Sharei af chavero mahapich ba, says the Ramban, they were both looking for this mitzia, and simultaneously they were both trying to see if they could make a kinyan. Ela shehu kadam v'nafal olei. This guy jumped and fell on it, which was not the right thing to do from the perspective of Hilchas Kinyanim, and the other guy picked it up. And then the Ramban quotes the Sheet of Tosus that you don't apply the principle of Nikur Rush of Oni Amhapet Pacharora in a case of Hefker. But clearly the Ramban, in his own opinion, before he quotes the Achirim, maintains a broader definition of Ani Amahapach Bacharora. It would apply even in the case of Hefker. Here in our sugya, it was not a scenario of Ani Amahapach Bacharora because they were both looking for it simultaneously. If you take a look at Rashi and Kiddushin, which is the second paragraph on your page, Ani Amahapach Bacharora, Rashi says, Machazer Achreo Lizkos Bo Min Hefker. From the fact that Rashi in Kiddushin, which is the original source of the in Shas of Ani Amahapach Bacharora, he quotes the case of Hefker, you see that he reflects the opinion of the Ramban. So we have Tosfos on the one hand against the Ramban, Rashi and the Ramban on the other hand. The Bach, who's one of the later, you know, he's already after the period of the Rishonim, he's already the Achronim, he's one of the Poskim, he writes in Choshen Mishpat, which is the next source on your page, Hasugya b'metziah donok ak mitzad ikar adin, mi zocha b'metziah. As according to the strict letter of the law, the second guy who picked it up, it's his, he acquired ownership on it. That's according to the strict letter of the law. And therefore the Rishon who fell on it does not have rights to be Kona, because he indicated he wants to be Kona with Nefila, and Nefila is not a Kenyan. However, with regard to the question, says the Bach, whether the Sheni who acquired ownership of it is called a Rasha, because he violated the Takana of Ani Amahapach Bacharora, says the Bach, Bevadai Shavar al Takanas Chazal. V'roilo l'sheni l'osei sametzi l'rishon k'dei shlo yikari Rasha. So in summary, the Bach seems to adopt the position of Rashi and the Ramban, then Ani Amahapach Bacharora applies even in the case of Hefker. So bottom line, according to the Bach, the second guy, even though it's his, should really be giving it back to the first guy because of the din of Ani Amahapach Bacharora. Again, that's on an ethical level. On the strict letter of the law, it belongs to the Sheni. He made the Kenyan and not the Rishon. So let's see how we can apply all the above to our case. We started with a dog that was smelling something buried underground. Is that a Kenyan? Can the owner of the dog claim it's mine because my dog smelled it out?
The one thing I noticed about that case is what he smelt was not actually the dispute over what they fought over, because he probably smelt the body itself.
Right, for sure.
And what they're disputing is the money found next to the body.
Excellent. Okay. So Josh, hold on to that for just 1 minute.
Yeah.
But first I want to, before I get to that point, which is an excellent point, I want to ask the following question. Do you see a similarity, a sort of parallelism between the Mishnah Bava Metzia that we did in our case, whereby in the Mishnah Bava Metzia one person failed to make a Kenyan, the second one made the Kenyan, and therefore we're going to award ownership to the second fellow because he made the Kenyan, not to the first. Here too, the owner of the dog did not make any Kenyan. He didn't pick it up, he didn't even dig. So the one who dug it up and he picked it up, he acquired ownership of it. So it would seem beyond a question of a doubt, in other words, it's open and shut case, that the finder who picked up the satchel with the money inside of it has acquired ownership on it. My only doubt here is about the halach of Ani Amahapach Bacharora. In other words, could it be that once the dog smells this out, then the owner of the dog has a status of Ani Amahapach Bacharora? But wait a minute, who owns this tick, first of all? Is it owned by anyone? And are we looking to buy it from someone? It's ownerless, right?
Yeah.
It's Hefker. So if it's Hefker, then Tosa says, Kalakonim Zacha, let's fight it out. We both want it. Whoever gets it and makes the acquisition, it's his. So therefore, according to Tosa, it's absolutely crystal clear that not only would the finder who picked up this satchel after digging it up from the ground owns it legally, but even moreover, he's morally, ethically clean as a whistle. He hasn't violated even the halacha of Ani Amahapach Bacharora, because we're talking about Hefker. But here we get into an issue. Because what about Rashi and the Ramban? They maintain that even in the case of Hefker, we apply the principle, the Takanas Chazal, of Ani Amahapach Bacharora. So therefore, on a level of Takanas Chazal, would we say to the finder, you have to give it, or at least part of it, to the owner of the dog, because he was the one who smelled it first? Not he himself, but his dog.
He wasn't looking for it.
Correct. No. Excellent.
Right.
Josh, you could have said the whole shiur. He's not looking for it. In fact, even when the dog is smelling it, all he wants to do is get the dog out of there. And he's fighting with this dog and calling him names, and he's accusing him of, what are you doing over here? So you could talk about if somebody is actually seeking out the object and trying to acquire ownership on it. So if he got there first, you may even in the case of Hefka have to let him go. But in this case where the owner of the dog made no effort whatsoever to look for the object, he didn't follow the cue of the dog one iota, then I think we'd have to say that even the halacha of ani ha'machbir charora doesn't apply over here. However, there is one gemara that might be relevant. And that's a sugya in the Darim Daf Nun. Do you have that? That would be what? The fifth source on your page? Yeah. Oh. So the Gemara Nedarim on Daf Nun tells us the following story. Let's read it inside. Rav Gamda, Yahiv Dalid Zuze Lisfone. He paid, Rav Gamda paid, hired these workers at the price of 4 Zuzim. La asuye bahon mid'om, that they should purchase some object on his behalf. Lo ashkechu, they couldn't find it. They went out to the market, but they couldn't find it. Asuye le bahon kupa, instead they bought him a monkey. That's an interesting purchase. Ishtamit al lachrata. The monkey, as monkeys tend to do, ran away. And he went into some hiding place. Chafru basre. So they really searched out this monkey. They ran after him. And what did they find? Ashkechua, they found him to Ravye Arma Galaisa. They found him hovering over precious stones. Aisinule Kulhun. So all these workers brought Rav Gamda, not just the monkey that they bought for him, but together with these precious jewels, these pearls. Because what caused them to find these pearls?
The monkey.
So it's interesting that these workers felt intuitively that the right thing to do would be to deliver, even though who actually found them? It was the workers, but they delivered all of them, plopped them down on the table of Rav Gamda. And why? Because it was his monkey that led to the discovery of it. So I thought this would shed a light on our sugya, because we're talking about the fact that the finder only located this tick, this pouch, because of the dog. It was the dog who screamed and barked because he had smelled it out. If not for the dog, he never in a billion years would have found this money. So he unearthed it because of the caliph. It's very similar to the case of the kof. However, I just want to point out to you that here, all the Rishonim, the Ran, who's the most important Rishon on the Durim and Tosfos, they agree that what these workers did was mimidas chasidus v'lo min adin. Now, it's according to the strict letter of the law, they could have actually acquired ownership on these jewels for themselves. That they brought it to Rav Gamda, the entire satchel, and they said it's yours, that was mimidas chasidus. Now notice there are three levels here. There's din, there's lefnim mishus adin, and then there's midas chasidus. Right? Lefnim mishus adin means I want to do what's right. You know, sometimes you have something that's called midin shamayim. Midas chasidus is to be overly pious, you know, to really go beyond the law completely. It's what you call meta halachic, you know. And the question is, what should we say to this finder, in the case of the pouch, who dug it up on the ground because of the dog? The owner of the dog is claiming it for himself. That he has no right to claim. nor would he have a right to say ani amahapet b'charora, because he did nothing. He didn't lift a finger to indicate that he was digging. Besides which, according to Tosus, there's no ani amahapet b'charora in hefker. But would it be applicable in the case of the finder to say midas chassidus? These workers legally had rights to the jewels that they found, but because the find was set up, was caused by someone's animal in this case, they gave the coins and the jewels to the owner of the animal. Would it therefore be the right thing to do for the finder to say, I'm going to give at least part of it, of this treasure that he discovered, to the owner of the door? So I have here the Sefer Mishpatei HaTorah that I told you about. It's a fascinating Sefer Tom Masechta Bava Metzia, and it's authored by Rav Tzvi Spitz, a Yerushalmi, and he writes the following. He says, Gam benidon didan, applying the Gemara in Nidarim to our case, our circumstance, Yeshna midas chasidus, it would be very much the right thing to do, lases labala kelev, chelek me'amitzia, some part in this $100,000 fine. Why? Kevan shemachmas hakelev his galgal adover shenimtza mitzia. If not for the kelev, he never would have found this mitzia. So the dog was set up a chain of actions, a cause and effect, that led ultimately to this great fine. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, if you're using the Gemara Nedarim as a paradigm for me to succeed, this is Safonim Nasal Rav Gamda as Kolam Argolios Shinit Matsu, are we expecting therefore that the one who finds the pouch should give over to the owner of the dog every last cent? Like the Gemara in Nedarim? Omnam, he says, May Akra Lamaisare Kol Dolar Shiyite Namotsi Lavala Kelev Yeshbo Midas Chsidus. Therefore, we write, it lends itself, it's given over to the decision, the intuitive feeling of the finder. Any amount that he decides to share with the owner of the dog, yesh bo mishum midas chassidus, sheishtabchu bo gedol le'olam, but no one could demand that he fork over any, even a red cent of this entire fine. Now, I want to throw out another possibility. We know that in Hilchas Kinyonim, you have to have what's called a bar das. The classical phrase for someone who's not a bardas is cheresh shote v'kata. And clearly the dog is a la bardas. But what happens if a cheresh shote v'kata finds something? So take a look in your page, the Mishnah in Gittin, on Dafnam Nuntes, Elu Dvarim Amru Mipnei Darkei Shol. The Mishnah enumerates an entire list of takanos, institutions, that were made in order to guarantee the peace, to keep harmony amongst people. So, for example, when it comes to aliyos, you know, we don't want an anarchy where everybody's going to fight for the first aliyah, the second aliyah. So we give the Kohen to breed first, we give the Levi after, then the Israel. This takana is meant to ensure darkei shalom. And there are many others. Mitzias cheresh shote v'katan, if an object, a lost object that's ownerless, is found by a cheresh shote v'katan, technically can they make a kinyan? No. Can they possess it, acquire it? No, the labar das. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says yesh v'em mishum gezel. The Rabbanan instituted a quasi ownership such that if you grab it away from the cheresh shote v'katan, at least on a drabana level, you violate the isur gzeila mishum darkei shalom. Rav Yossi omer gezel gomur. Rav Yossi said that the nature of this Isur Gzeil is not just Darkei Shalom, but the Rabbanon gave them ownership such that at least the Rabbanon is real Gezel. So I'm wondering if the status of a Kelev, insofar as an animal doesn't have Das, you know, we try to be kind to animals, but they don't have Das, would there be a Takaniya that the owner of the animal claims that Mishum Darkei Shalom, you can't grab it away? The animal has rights. Again, it's not exactly similar to Cheresh Shalot V'Kod. Why not?
Because it's an animal. I mean, it's...
Well, first of all, what Josh was saying before, the owner of the animal didn't even lift a finger to try to get at least the Cheresh Shalot V'Kod on.
Would take it. Yeah.
And not only that, what did the animal smell out, as you said before? Not the money. Money doesn't have a smell, but rather what?
The body.
The body. So I don't even know if you could apply the principle of Darkei Shalom, even if you'll expand it to include someone's animal, in this case to the money, because really the whole discussion is about, you know, the whole role, I should say, that the animal's playing here. What attracts the animal is the smell of the body. But I would ask a different question. What would you say about the following? If an animal picks up something, let's say an animal finds some food, are you allowed to grab that food out of the mouth of the animal? That's called tsar bali chayim. And the halacha recognizes that we're not allowed to cause suffering to an animal. But I want to make two points here. First of all, this animal has nothing in its mouth. In fact, the owner of the animal is trying to pull the dog away. Secondly, even if the animal had something in its mouth, tsar bali chayim is only prohibited if you do it for naught, in vain. If you have what's called a toeles, if you're doing something, like for example, you know, people ask about scientific experiments and then you use animals and rabbits and rats or whatever you use. What about tsar bali chayim? The answer is that halakhically there's no tsar bali chayim when it's a toeles. So even if the animal would have had this pouch in its mouth, and it's uncomfortable or sad, you know, it'll cause the animal some sort of tension or anguish when you grab it out of its mouth, I still think that this would not be a case of tsar bali chayim. Alright, now I want to raise with you a second question. And you may see that there towards the bottom of the page. And the case is that a person goes into a men's suit store, goes into the changing room with a suit, and he's trying on the suit, and lo and behold, he finds $300 in the pocket of the suit. Adam nichnas lechanus ubikesh liknos chalifa shenitfer abachas matfaros. So this is a suit that's coming from, produced in some country. Maybe it's coming from China, I don't know. I recently bought a suit in Israel, it was made in Egypt. Wow. And the time before that, in the very same store, I bought a suit that was made in Turkey. It's interesting. Shemadad Oz Esam and Michnas, when he tried on to measure the slacks to see if they fit him, Matzah be'echad mikisav, he finds in one of the pockets Shloshmel's dollar, which it seems was left by one of those people working in whatever country it is who were sewing. I don't know, sewing the suit.
Mm-hmm.
Tailors. They were calling them tailors. So at the end of the day, the one who was trying on the suit and has possession of $300, he decides he's not even going to buy the suit. But now he wants to know, what about the $300? Who owns it? Does he own it because he found it? Or does the owner of the store own it because it was found inside the pockets of one of his slacks? You know, until the slacks are sold, it belongs to the owner of the store. And secondly, does it make any bit of a difference in determining this halacha who owns the $300 if the one who tried on and found the $300 is indeed going to buy the slacks? Well, that's totally irrelevant. So with regard to these questions, you'll see a statement in the Gemara Bava Metzia. Amar Rav Yosi, Chatzero shel Adam kona lo shelo midaito. I think we've discussed this in the past. Mm-hmm. When a person owns a chatzer, anything that falls into that chatzer, whether it's known to him or unknown to him, the chatzer, if it's mishtameres, if it's got walls and encompasses the object within its walls, its fences, the chatzer is kone on behalf of the owner of the chatzer. It's almost as if the chatzer is a self-appointed shliach to work as an agent on behalf of the owner of the chatzer. And therefore, coming back to that case, you might argue that the store owner, insofar as he owns all the suits and all the slacks, the pockets of those slacks that he hasn't sold yet are his. That's a chatzer for him. And any money that's literally locked up in that pocket, I don't mean literally, but it's locked in the sense that no one can have access to it, is he should be kona with chatzer. Again, there's a radical premise here in Rav Yossi that a kinyan can be made even without das. That itself has to be understood, because the most fundamental requirement, the underlying halacha in all of kinyanim, is that you need das kona. Here, I don't even know it's in my chatzer. So how does that work? But before we answer that question, I want to show you another Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Matzah begal uvekosel yoshen arelu shalom. If you have in your backyard a heap of something or other, wheat or whatever it is, or you have an old kotel, a fence, a wall that goes around you, and somebody comes along and finds money that was hidden in this gal or in this kotel, is the Mishnah says arelu shalom. The Gemara quotes a brisa, tanum ipnei sheyachalomerlo shalamoriyim hein. I think we've discussed this in the past. If it came from earlier generations, then it belonged to the idol worshipping nations of Canaan. So the Gemara asks, how do you know it came from an earlier generation? Onto Amori Amatzni. An Amori would hide some money, stash it away, or a jewel, a ring inside his coat, and a Jew wouldn't. Yisrael Lo Matzni. Lo Tzricha, the Gemara says, the Shatich Tfei. You can look at it, subject it to a carbon test, and you can see that it's very old. It's been there for hundreds of years. It dates back to the period of the Canaanites. Yeah, but I don't get it. I'm just anticipating Tosa's cash. Yeah. Alright, so it belongs to the Canaanites, but
the
chatzer should be kona. This is somebody's private wall. And it's mishtameris, it's protected there. Tosa says, v'yim tomar, v'likne le chatzero lebala gal lebala koso. Even if it belonged at one point in history to these goyim, but now the Jew owns it by virtue of his chatzer. And here Tosfos says something very radical. Yesh lomar de'ein chatzer kona bedavar she'achalio shelo yimtzeinu li'olam kigon ha'akha she'umutzna v'yovnei akoso. A chatzer can be kona if eventually you'll find out about it, that you have something in your chatzer. But says Tosfos, if something is hidden in the chatzer in such a way that it's very likely that you'll never ever know about it, then your chatzer can't be kona. It's fascinating to me, because I think what Tosfos is doing here, he's limiting the power of a chatzer, because as we said before, chatzer is a radical revolution that you can be kona something without das. So Tosfos says, okay, you don't have das now, but eventually you'll find out about it. So the chatzer can be kona now based on the fact that we assume it's shchiach that you'll know about. If you'll never find it, for example, something that's hidden between the cracks of this gigantic wall, or for example, if we come full swing back to our case, is the balach hanus going to go through the slacks of every single suit he has in his store to search maybe something was left in there? What are the chances before he actually sells the suit that he'll ever even know about these dollars? Therefore, it would seem logical to assume that this metziah belongs to the person who found it, who tried on the suit in the changing room, and he found it. The owner of the store cannot claim, well, it originally belonged to some tailor or whatever, a dressmaker, a suit maker out in Yehupitz in China, but I made a kenya because once I bought this suit, my ownership sets up the pockets of the suit as a chotzer. But that wouldn't be the case if we assume that he may never even find it. However, I thought that this was a clear-cut case. The Mishpatei HaTorah quotes a Mordechai. And I wanted to share this Mordechai with you. The Mordechai says the following, if I can summarize it. How is it we ask the question of Yossi, says, Chatzer Shalom, Konolo Shalom, he died. Where do we find a Kenyan without Das? He says, no, the Mordechai. There is Das. At the moment that the acquisition of this chatzer was made, when I purchased this piece of fenced off yard, I had das for any object that in the future will come into this chatzer. Says the Mordechai, this only applies for something that
will come in,
and it's almost, how shall I say, predictable, or if not predictable, it's likely, or, but if it's completely lo shchiach, then he never had das, that his, when he made the kinyan, to be kohen as something that he doesn't expect in a million years will be there, fall into his chatzer. So if we apply the rule of the Mordechai, then we could say that the same logic applies here. At what moment in time is the das generated through which chatzer operates? At the moment you acquired ownership over that chatzer. Here, the Balach Hanus purchases all these suits on a rack. He has in mind only the suits. He doesn't anticipate that there'll be there in the suits something that's lo shchiach. Tosis, on the other hand, says he might not find it ever. You know, I'm a little bit confused. I certainly agree that according to the Mordechai, it's lo shchiach that there's going to be $300 in the pocket of a brand new suit. And therefore, the Kenyan chatzer that was initially made with das of the kohen, meaning in this case the owner of the store, would not include something in the pockets of the suit. But I'm not 100% sure that the case of money in a suit pocket is exactly equivalent to the case of finding some little pin or some little something in the middle of a kotel, in between the cracks. I could agree that that could go on for thousands of years, no one will ever find it, but I'm not sure if the same thing applies to these dollars, because eventually maybe he will find it. Now, I don't think that this halacha would depend on whether or not he's buying the suit. Because again, his claim to the money, the one who tries on the suit, is not the ownership of the suit, but rather the kinyan that he makes on the money when he finds the money. So, mimanashach, if you want to say that according to Tosis, if this is considered shchiach, that maybe, you know, when I bought the suit, I thought that maybe eventually I'll find something in the suit. If that's called shchiach, then whether or not the buyer buys the suit or not, the potential buyer, is irrelevant. It belongs to the Balach Hanus. If on the other hand I go with the Mordechai's approach, that Chatziru Shal Adam Konolo Midaito means that what? That, just one second, let me just go over this one more time. So again, according to Tosfos, what is Tosfos' answer? That since he'll never find it, the chatzer can't work on his behalf. According to the Mordechai, he had das to be koned when he purchased it. I think I said it wrong before. So according to the Mordechai, you know, something that could be there, and it's likely that it'll be there, he had das for here. So again, even though he doesn't make a kinyan, he doesn't decide to buy the suit, I think he has rights, according to the Mordechai, to own the money that he found. According to Tosis, again, we vacillated back and forth. Is it something that it's shaykh that he'll find later on? Or do we assume that he'll never actually find
it? And if he buys it, then it's his.
Absolutely not. If we go with Tosfos, yeah, and we assume that this is something that it's shaykh, that eventually the Balach Hanus will find.
Right.
All those assumptions are questionable, are very iffy, because we may pass like the Mordechai. But if you pass like Tosfos, And Chatzer Shalom Karol Shalomi Daito, where's the Shalomi Daito operate only if the Chatzer is holding on to something on behalf of the Baal in such a way that he'll eventually find it. That's number one. Number two, maybe you'll eventually find the monies in the pockets. That's questionable. Then I would say that even if the one who tried on the suit and actually found the money decides to buy it, it doesn't matter. The chotzer, before he bought it, was kona on behalf of the Baal HaChanus. Halach l'maisa, I would assume that the finder could keep it. Either because we paskin like the Mordechai, which means that chatzer shalom kona will be daita only if it's shachiach, something that I can anticipate. Who would anticipate money to be found there? And even in Timsa Loma, I feel in Timsa Loma Ketosis, that we pass like Tosis, that the Das here is supplied because the Chutz is operating on his behalf. I doubt if you could argue logically that this find is Shriach. Now, what are the statistical probabilities that the owner of the store will ever actually discover the money? Okay, then we'll stop here.